To show you.
You get home and then you just face plant.
No, then it's weedy time.
Weedy time? What, are you a narc?
Yeah. You know, the old Mary Jane.
You sound like a narc. Yeah,
what? Does anybody have any reefer?
How do you do, fellow kids?
Where do I find the nearest drugs?
I would like to purchase some marijuana, please.
Yes, yes. Verified transaction if possible.
I want you to do the little blowing emoji in the transaction.
Yeah, yeah.
With the little leaves.
You need to make sure I have the first and last names of all parties involved. Also, I just like to be safe when I buy my marijuana.
My drugs.
My illegal substances. It's legal here.
They're like, you're like speaking into like your collar.
Oh, we're supposed to talk about heroin. I'm in the wrong crowd. Oh, okay.
Anyway,
well, let's go. Let's do it. Fuck it.
Let's just circle back. Anyway, yeah. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast.
Speaking of being on drugs when you probably thought of this concept, huh?
Anyway,
could have done that better. All right,
it's okay. You did your best. Yeah. I'm your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey,
he's had a day.
He's like
he's hunched over the bar at Moe's. Like that's like kind of the vibe you have going on right now.
I would be, if Barbara's was still open in my apartment, I'd be there right after this. Just
I know it. You would have just said like, oh, can we record at my place? Mm-hmm. And then we would have just like, yeah.
Oh yeah. What,
I
nice.
Miss gin and tonics, dude. I miss gin and tonics so much.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, they made some good G&Ts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All
anyway,
right.
Anyway, guys, welcome back. We hinted about it last week. The widely disregarded, very little known cult classic?
Possibly. It's very much, like, has the DNA for what could amount to it.
Yeah, I think, because it came out pretty recently, give it, like, 5 more years.
Yeah, it came out...
5 years ago.
Jeez. To be totally honest, though, I'm not going to lie here. I thought this was shot in, like, 2012, and they, like, waited on it. But I know that wasn't the case. I very quickly looked that up, because I was just like...
Wow.
It has that vibe.
It
has that, like, just a little before... kind of vibe, like
before what?
It has a to me, it has a very post or in the middle of Cabin in the Woods kind of vibe, but like not quite a Happy Death Day kind of vibe. So
it's
somewhere there, it's somewhere there.
Anyway, we're talking about The Final Girls from 2015.
Yes, and I get
not to be confused with Final Girls from 2015,
which we'll never cover.
No,
that cover looks stupid.
It does.
When I saw both, I'm like, hey, talent, hey. What the fuck is that? Ugh.
Yeah, they fucked up.
Yeah. Anyway, so this, according to IMDb, tells us that a young woman grieving the loss of her mother, a famous screen queen from the 1980s, finds herself pulled into the world of her mom's most famous movie. Reunited, the women must fight off the film's maniacal killer. Pretty killer concept, actually.
It's
not that
a
bad.
Really cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's cool.
It's a very cool concept that, oddly, I'll get to my thoughts on it later. There's a lot to say.
Okay, I'm eager to learn your thoughts.
This is directed by Todd Strauss Schulzen?
Schulzen.
Ooh. The Todd Schultz fucking spring cleaner. Oh my god, it cleans everything.
Yes.
He's got that name.
Uh-huh.
All right, this is produced by Michael London and Janice Williams. Okay. And written by M.A. Fortin and Joshua John Miller. Joshua John Miller is the most American fucking name I've ever heard in my goddamn life, dude.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Okay, but Joshua John Miller
only
has 3 names, and that guy probably founded, like, a Dakota. Like, he was the first guy. I was like, this rock is the line right here.
This is the North.
We're the North Dakota. Anybody below this over there?
What are you
talking to
call
you, Frank.
It?
I'm talking to you, Frank. You get the fuck out of here.
What are you going to call it?
Millerland.
South Dakota. I was leading you to a South Dakota.
Anyways, let me get more wine. I'll reconfigure my brain here.
Maybe if I drink enough, I'll make sense. That's a thought process of an alcoholic.
Well, hey, I was sober yesterday.
Were you? The whole day?
I had a little bit of weedy.
Some reefer.
Some good old reefer.
That's funny. I can't stand you.
This was starring Tysa Farmiga?
I think so. I've never actually heard her name said out loud.
I haven't heard it, but I'm assuming that's Vera Farmiga's daughter.
Sure.
I gotta find this out. Hold on. Can you find that out for me if that is Vera Farmiga's
Since I'm running
daughter?
The computer.
Yeah. Because I'm on a tablet. It's going to make me go out of the app.
Uh-huh. I understand.
Shit. You know technology. Fucking.
No.
What?
Not related.
Are you fucking kidding me? They look alike.
So who were you thinking?
Vera Farmiga?
That's her sister.
Oh, okay. Vera, whatever it is, but yes.
Yeah, that, yes.
Wow.
That's her sister.
Okay, not related. I'm like, they look the fucking same.
I looked at parents and I was like, that definitely is not either of their names.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay. Wow, big difference in age then. Shit. Anyways, also, it's also starring Malin Ackerman.
Sure.
Adam Devine. Very funny. Thomas Middleditch.
Yes.
What is that, the fucking guy from Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
Okay. I hated his character in this movie.
You did?
I hated his
You hated his
I
Really? Because it's you?
I know. I couldn't stand his fucking voice.
Wow, there's some like self.
Yeah, no. I was just like, no. He's playing it too hard. Suppose playing it too hard this movie. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't like it.
Continue.
Who I love, though, and anything she's in is Alia Shawkat.
Oh my god, I love her.
Not only is she fucking good in everything. Yeah. Like, even in a shitty movie, she's like, I'm like, okay, you killed it. Yeah. Like, you fucking killed it. Fellow IE person.
Oh, no shit.
Yep. From my hometown, Riverside, California.
She's from Riverside?
Yep.
That's so cool. Yep. I had no idea.
Talking about my girl, Alia Shawkat. Fucking goat. Anyways. also, Alexander Ludwig and Nina Dobrev.
Yes.
All right.
Do you recognize either of those names?
Nope, not at all. Who are they?
Alexander Ludwig, it was in like a lot of like the action, like young adult movies, like turned, like books turned into movies. Like he was in Hunger Games. I'm going to be so wrong. I'm pretty sure he's in Hunger Games. Nina Dobrev is the main character from The Vampire Diaries, a Kevin Williamson original.
Okay. Good to know. You know what? Pretty stacked cast. Not bad.
I was surprised with the cast, honestly.
Me too. I mean, it did feel like an Adam Devine, Thomas Middleditch kind of like brand movie. But I feel like everyone else around them actually was really good.
Yeah. I will say I liked Adam Devine, even though he's like in all of like the Hollywood circles. He's known for being a douche.
Yeah. He actually plays douche super well in this one. Really well.
I wonder why.
I mean, he always does, but he really nails it this time.
Yeah. I liked him in this better than like Pitch Perfect.
Seen Pitch Perfect in so long. We'll talk about it, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, Pitch Perfect, the horror film. What?
I'm divine. It's going to come up. this was released at South by Southwest on a very awesome, wonderful day. March 13th, 2015.
A glorious day in
glorious,
history.
Glorious day. I always agree. And then also, it was finally released on October 9th, 2015. Oh boy, this is sad. Budgeted at $4.5 million, which is respectable. Not as respectable. The gross earnings of $1.2 million. Ouch. I really wanted to actually know the story behind this.
Yes,
so
we will get
guide
into
me.
It.
Please
yes.
guide me, because I'm a little sad about that.
Before we get into it, though, we do have to talk about... We haven't actually dedicated its due diligence to the final girl trope.
Well, that's weird, because we've been at this for almost 3 years.
I know.
And... About fucking time. I mean, if there's any one with the name of the trope
right.
in the
I
title.
I felt like it was appropriate. Like, we've talked about final girls. We've talked about, like, kind of what they are and what they represent. But we haven't gotten into the... This is Alex's theory corner.
Yes. Oh, shit. We gotta have a song or something, because I'm into that. I haven't had an Alex's theory corner in a long time.
It's been a while.
It has.
So...
Ooh. Exciting.
Anthony just learned that.
I did. That made me a lot happier. Okay. I haven't had this in a long time. Okay.
Okay. So, as you all know, The Final Girl is a trope in horror films, particularly slasher films. that referred to the last girl or women to survive to confront the killer. Assumedly, the one who's left to tell the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
The final...
Sequel Bates.
Right.
Yeah.
Some examples. The final girl has been observed in many of your favorite horror films. Yes, your favorite horror films.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Including The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, Alien, Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, and, of course, Scream.
Yes, most of those are my favorite horror films, except one. We'll leave you to find out which one it is not my favorite.
Okay, I was just like, what? Okay, interesting. Yeah, that's why we have yet to cover a single night. Both don't like...
We'll bleep it when it comes time.
Because we both don't like bleep.
Well, anyway. We might when we come across and finally do it, but we'll have to wait and see.
Mm.
We'll have to wait and see. Maybe this season. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So, for this term, Final Girl, we can thank the horror theory goat, Carol J. Clover, for coining this term in her book, Men, Women, and Chainsaws, Gender in the Modern Horror Film from 1992.
Not Carl J. Clover,
no.
As you were about to say right there. Author
I'm a little
of,
tongue-tied.
author of Chainsaws and Shit.
You know.
Hot broads in film.
I went back to redo it so we could cut it, and now we can't.
No.
Fuck you, fucking fuck.
Well, we can't get into his book.
Fucker.
All right, let's go.
So.
Theory Corner.
So, Clover suggested that in these films, the viewer began the film by sharing the perspective with the killer, but experienced a shift in identification to the final girl partway through the film. So, let's dissect that a little bit,
let's do it.
Shall we?
That seems to be some a lot of underlying stuff there if you're making that journey. So, yeah.
So, a common plot line in many horror films is one where several victims are killed one by one by a killer amid increasing terror, culminating in a climax in which the last surviving member of the group, usually female, either kills the killer or escapes.
Culminating climax.
Gotcha.
I'm here to provide just a base level of understanding here. She's going to bring it out for me. It's Theory Corner.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Final Girl trope has evolved throughout the years from early Final Girls, most often being damsels in distress, often being saved by a strong male character such as a police officer or a heroic stranger, to more modern Final Girls who are more likely to survive due to their own abilities. According to Clover's definition, Lila Crane from Psycho 1960 is an example of a female survivor and not a final girl.
Okay, makes total sense.
Due to her lack of quote-unquote moral purity, who is saved by a male, Sam Loomis, not to be confused with the Halloween character of the same name. At the film's ending, of course, Psycho.
Wait, quick question then.
Hmm.
What is Lila Crane's lack of moral purity? She seems pretty straight. She just talks back or what?
She's like, she shoots from the hip. She's like, you know.
Yeah, she's not dainty.
She's, yeah. And I, no, because Lila Crane, I think there was something that like, because like, we know like Marion Crane is like,
oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. She has the vibe, everything going on that should lead to
well,
it.
Well, no, because
yeah.
She has sex in the movie.
That's what killed her though, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
what
I'm
saying.
She's
the final girl elements,
sex
and then
equals,
she's fucking
yeah,
done.
We're
yeah.
going to get into it.
Okay.
So, Laurie Strode from Halloween, of course, a favorite, is a final girl, but one that is saved by someone else. Someone also named Sam Loomis.
yeah. I love the writing though. That was good. Good connection there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
On this basis, Tony Williams argues that while 1980s horror film heroines were more progressive than those from earlier decades, the gender change is done conservatively, and the final girl convention cannot be regarded as a progressive one without more thorough investigation. This is a quote from one of my favorite books, The Dread of Difference, which is a horror film theory book. It's also about gender.
Honestly, that makes a lot of sense though.
Yeah,
100%. There's definitely a stilted victory when it comes to a lot of these, a lot of what's happening here, but obviously you'll get into that.
Yes. William goes on to say that in many slashers, the final girl's victory is often ambiguous or only apparent. The fact that she is still alive at the end of the movie does not make her a victorious heroine. And we see this time and time again. Friday the 13th is like a prime example of this.
I love how I did not scroll down and actually had a pretty similar assessment. Okay. I'm learning something. Alex's Theory Corner. You gotta do this more. I always love it when it happens.
I'm glad. I'm glad you feel like you're learning something.
I do.
So in many of these movies, the end is ambiguous, like I mentioned. So where the killer entity is or might still be alive, leaving viewers uncertain about the future of the final girl. A perfect example of this would be Jess Bradford in 1974's Black Christmas.
Covered in our first season.
Forever ago.
God. That was a good one, though.
It was good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So William notes that final girls often survive, but in the sequel, they are either killed or institutionalized. Hmm. Notable example is Alice Hardy, who survives Friday the 13th, but is only, you know, survives only to be killed in the beginning of Friday the 13th Part 2.
Very true. We can name a lot of examples. We've covered a lot of slashes. If you've noted any of our sequel episodes, this happens all the fucking time.
Totally.
We're on some of our fourth Part 4s by this point. And I'm going to tell you, not a lot of Part 1s make it to the end.
No. They're like, we got to keep this train going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to reference you. We'll bring you back in the third one. You're fucking dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Good body count.
So in more recent films, this has started to change, with the final girl no longer being always doomed. A notable example being the Scream series. Please see episodes 14, 44, and 110 for more information.
Oh God, Sidney Prescott is the baddest bitch in the world.
Absolutely.
Oh.
I love Sidney Prescott.
She's amazing.
Yes. So, back to Clover, the final girl in many movies shares common characteristics. She's typically sexually unavailable or virginal. She avoids the vices of the victims, like illegal drug use or, you know, just illegal whatever, shenanigans.
Yeah. It says no entry. Right. We're not going in there.
She's a rule follower. And then sometimes, not always, but usually, she'll have a unisex name, such as Avery, Chris, or Sydney.
Interesting.
Yeah. And occasionally the final girl will have a shared history with the killer. The final girl is the investigating consciousness of the film, moving the narrative forward. And as such, that's why she exhibits intelligence, curiosity, vigilance, etc. So another trope of slashers, particularly in the 80s, is of course the infamous, commonly referenced on this podcast, death by sex trope, where sex scenes are shortly followed by violence, with the participants being murdered in gruesome ways.
Not to be confused with the death by snooze-stew in Futurama, where Amazonian women would bone male travelers to death.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, their pelvises were crushed.
Thanks, Futurama.
Mm-hmm. Great episode.
That sounds like a great episode. So one of the basic premises of Clover's theory is that audience identification is unstable and fluid across gender lines, particularly in the case of slasher films. During the final girl's confrontation with the killer, Clover argues that she becomes masculinized through phallic appropriation by taking up a weapon such as a knife or a chainsaw against the killer.
I haven't heard the word phallic appropriation. I don't think ever, or in one of the last Theory Corners, so this is actually pretty interesting.
I mean, any time to bring up phallic appropriation, I'm all over it.
Okay. The season of phallic appropriation is coming, guys.
No, but seriously, like, I talked about this loads of times in college, where basically...
Loads? Ooh, I did it!
Thank you. No, he just looked at me pointedly like, loads? Really? Anyway. a very notable example of this is Alien.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very phallic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Alien is just full of phallic imagery, though. But that is a conversation for another day.
Down to the creature design.
Yeah, the creature design, the gun design. I can't wait to talk about Alien, which may or may not be happening sometime in the near future.
Oh my gosh. Badass, though. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
It'll
100%,
be fun.
100%.
So, the phenomenon of the male audience having to identify with a young female character in an ostensibly male-oriented genre is usually associated with sadistic voyeurism and raises interesting questions about the nature of slasher films and their relationship with feminism, which is why I cannot recommend Men, Women, and Chainsaws enough. It's so fucking good.
Also, sadistic voyeurism, by the amount of over 100 episodes we've done, is like an everything.
It's so interesting because, and this is kind of like going back to what I was talking about earlier, in this particular, or not in this particular movie, but in like the final girl trope in general, mm-hmm. as a male, in a male dominated genre, like the men have to sit there and basically cheer or project themselves onto this, like, mm-hmm. usually masculinized, like, female character. And that's why...
Masculized, like, in the sense that given a... like given traits.
Her traits, mm-hmm. her name. That's why, like, that's why the unisex name is super, yeah. super common. And then, like, being, like, the hero. And mm-hmm. it's a very interesting, like, dynamic. Especially for the slasher genre. Like, in this case, I'm like... painting with a broad brush in the slasher genre.
You know what I do find interesting, though, something to bring in that is almost unique to the slasher genre sometimes, is because, correctly, the final girl typically takes her hero's place in the three-act structure.
Yes.
It's always funny, though, that the damsel is often the dude, and they often die.
Yeah.
It's like... horrifically. We'd rather let you just die than actually have her have a victory here with you as the prize.
Right. Or even, like, you know, characters who are in love. Like, they have to kill one of them.
Because, make it hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they can't escape unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whether physically or emotionally. Like,
and that's not even to the main characters either. Any characters that happen to have some shared affection that's not just like, I want to fuck today. Like...
yes, because that's what teenagers sound like.
That's what I said when I was like a teenager. Yeah, all the time.
Fuck today.
Yeah, yeah. Explains probably why it took a while. But,
walking into a party just being like, I wanna fuck.
All of today, ladies, pull the glasses down slightly.
Ladies.
Yeah, you want to see this? No glasses, huh? You gotta work for it.
God damn it, Anthony.
I would die so fast as a slash.
I think we've both agreed.
Yeah, we've like, established this
between,
in the past.
Between our drug use and overall slutty behavior.
Yeah, no. especially if I was a female. I'll be done way quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could.
Oh, I'd be done.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'd be like, totally. Fucking just knocked out.
Oh my gosh. I've had this conversation so many times. And each time, like, part of me wants to be like, oh, I'd live. I'd be okay. Like, I could be like... And then another part of me is just like, no.
Mm-mm. I'm sorry. Sorry.
I'm stoned all the time and my ass is too fat. I just can't.
Mm-hmm. Not virginal enough for this shit. Not even by a mile.
Mm-mm. Not by several. Anyway.
Yes, go back.
So in closing, Clover argues that for a film to be successful, it is necessary for the surviving character to be female because she must experience abject terror. And many viewers would reject a film that showed abject terror on the part of a male. The terror has a purpose, and in that the female, if she survives, is, quote, purged of undesirable characteristics, such as a relentless pursuit of personal pleasure.
Ooh. Purged. Mm-mm.
So it's a punishment.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you fucking made it.
You're like a goody two-shoes. Well, now you're going to, like, watch all your friends die.
Yeah, and you're going to get killed in the next fucking movie. If you killed them, if you survived good.
Yeah, if you survived well enough.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's a little bit about the final girl. That is not an exhaustive, obviously. My theory corners never are, but I don't.
It's okay. Theory corner part two.
Well,
for
no.
For final girl 2015.
Absolutely not. But no, truly, I love talking about this stuff, and it really brought up a lot of memories of like college and like mm-hmm. being like, oh my God. But
I'm not a slut.
No, I was in college just like, oh God, I'm a slut.
I wouldn't survive anything.
No. I run too slow. I smoke too much weed.
Mm-hmm. I feel you. Yeah. I feel you. I'm brown. So, yeah. Done.
Yeah. I will also, like, to be, if we're going strictly off of tropes here and character and, like, just, like, not even, like, you know, the fact that we're slutty. Mm-hmm. It's, like, you're brown and then I'm, like, the comedic, like, best friend. Like,
oh,
I'm dead.
Absolutely. No, you're the comedic best friend that, like, was dragged there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're just like, and I'm the brown guy that knows all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hey, in a slasher, this would happen. And then
you're Randy.
Yep, yeah, and then I'm done. And then I'm
so
fucking done.
So you might
done.
Make it to the sequel.
I might do it. I'm done at some point.
But though. Also, Randy's like a super virgin.
I'm definitely not a super virgin. See, that's the thing. I'm more like Crispin Glover.
Are you?
No, because I'm not a dead fuck. Ah! Nah. See our friend 13th part 4 episode about that one.
Nah.
Production time.
let's just talk about this actual movie instead of like...
No. Final Girls, Alex's Theory Corner, always endorsed. I hope you bring it up for birthday month because I got some stuff for you that, you know, you might find a theory in there. You might.
Really?
Because you're going to be writing two of those episodes. But still, you know? Yeah. I can feel free to bring the pain. Do it.
Bring the pain.
In February 14th, it was reported that Sony Pictures Worldwide Acquisitions, wow, that's a very company-ass name, had...
It's an evil company.
That is a very, like, we've acquired everything.
Worldwide Acquisitions.
Worldwide Acquisitions. What is that, Nike factory that hires children? Younger children!
That's like they can fit their hands into the mechanical parts.
Yeah, there you go. Look at the little fingers to do maintenance. Jesus. Anyways.
So many fingers.
Right out the first sentence, that's pretty fucked up. This company had bought the rights to the film under the Stage 6 Films banner, which sounds fucking dystopian right there, with Michael London and his company, Groundswell Productions, producing the feature. Mm. So, okay, all right. Very corporate-y. The film was originally picked up by New Line Cinema in November of 2011. Jesus, but the script was shopped elsewhere when production did not get off the ground because...
Development hell!
New Line Cinema also in 2011. Poor bastards. Hobbit was the reason for a lot of the fuck-ups around that.
Really?
They had the rights to The Hobbit.
New Line?
No, wait.
I thought Legendary.
No. Well, it was in a limbo because MGM had the rights. That's right. And then New Line was on it. It's... That particular portion of New Line's history is really fucked up.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, and MGM. Jesus. Yeah.
See, I don't know a lot about, like, the business side of it.
See, I followed that shit, but you know what?
Yeah, of course you did. Yeah. I was a junior in high school. So I just did not give a shit. I was just like, well, I'm going to go watch the football game on Friday.
That's when I started following this. Clearly junior high school, when I discovered forums. That's what it was. Discovery of forums. I'm like, see, this goes deep.
Yeah, see, when you got into forums, you got into film. Mm-hmm. I got pulled into like 2000s emo bandom. Like those were the forums I was on.
See, good old video games. It just led naturally. So, but the screenplay was written by the founder of North Dakota, Joshua John Miller, and M.A. Fortin, and was written by directed. By Todd Strauss Schulson. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Miller's father, Jason Miller, was an actor and writer who appeared as Father Karras in The Exorcist. Holy shit. That's some horror pedigree right there. Look at that. The script for The Final Girls was in part inspired by The Exorcist, with Miller pointing out, quote, I grew up watching my dad in The Exorcist, and there's something haunting, strange, confusing, and... a little bit unnatural to see your parent constantly die in film, but it's something that also becomes iconic, and we tried to deconstruct what the effects of that would be, as well as what it would be like if you had a second chance, but your second chance was inside of a movie.
Isn't that
you can tell that actually came from the heart right there. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
And I do believe Jason Miller did die in 2015. Like,
oh shit! So this makes a lot of
I think.
Wow, that actually wraps around quite a bit then.
Yeah.
I mean, just so you know, listeners, this movie has clearly, when I talked about the figures up top, not had a lot of attention. So if you want to give this movie some attention, highly recommend checking it out on Hulu. Just give it the numbers. It's actually, truly? It's not bad.
I'm so sorry. He died way before that. He died in 2001. So I'm like fairly certain that this was I remember reading that like this is like him like kind of dealing with his father's death.
That makes sense. There's definitely a lot of sentimentality in this movie. For sure. Of course, it was announced on February 27th, 2014 that Millen Ackerman and Tysa Farmiga had been cast in the two main roles for the film, playing mother-daughter Amanda and Max Cartwright, respectively.
Woo.
Also, Malin Ackerman, was in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, which is where I recognize her from.
Same director.
Oh,
not that. I'm sorry. I'm not sure if it's Go to White Castle, but yeah.
It could have been.
It's definitely a Harold and Kumar movie.
I'm pretty sure they at least wrote them then, right? If it's not the director, it has to be the writer, because there's a lot of...
Yes. It's something.
Dude. Are you... Really?
Yeah, I forgot to shoehorn that in there.
That explains the...
The director, Todd Strauss Schulson, he directed a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
Yeah, that tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That totally tracks. It shares a lot of that Harold and Kumar kind of DNA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never watched a Harold and Kumar movie.
Pretty dated, but a lot of fun. I watched the first
pretty
one.
Pretty dated.
As a kid in high school,
I'm sure you thought it was hilarious.
Oh, I loved it. I still love the first one.
I'm sure you thought it was hilarious.
I fucking own the DVD somewhere.
Oh my god.
On April 10th, 2014, it was revealed that Thomas Middleditch, Alexander Ludwig, Nina Dobrev, and Adam Devine had joined the cast in supporting roles. Wow, they really, really pulled out all the stops for this.
So, yeah.
Director Todd Strauss Schulson had always envisioned Alia Shawkat as Gertie. Fucking great casting. But he got the runaround from her manager, so he found her email address and brazenly contacted her directly. Dude, okay, quick aside here. She deserves to be in a lot better shit. She really does.
I mean, she's been in a lot of, like, indie stuff.
No, but she needs, like, I don't know. Not a lot of people look like her. And I mean, she acts pretty cool.
I agree. She's great.
She's really good at pulling off performance. I'm betting it's this piece of shit manager over here that she's like, meh.
You think?
Possibly. If she didn't even get the direct, she had to get circumvented to get this role.
I guess. I mean, I just remember, like, seeing her in Arrested Development and just being fucking like, oh.
Fast, dude. Maybe, like, was the shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyways, the writers modeled Tina after PJ Souls' character Linda Van Der Klok from Halloween. I knew it. I fucking knew it in 1978.
It's and so,
that,
like,
was right on fucking
also,
the money.
Also, just a quick aside, we haven't said this in forever, but PJ Souls is a national treasure.
She's amazing, dude. Any interview with PJ Souls, you're like, yeah, I'm in it. Tell me everything you need to know that
yeah,
you know about
great.
What you were doing. Yeah, she was fucking awesome. And also inspired by Jodie Draghi's character Morgan from The House on Sorority Row, which we have not covered yet.
No, we've dabbled in sorority horror films when we did Black Christmas, but that's it.
Remember, we have a lot of shitty slashes to get through.
Yeah, we do.
There's a lot of just
like
garbage that we gotta go through.
There's some choice and garbage.
I think we gotta insert some garbage in our schedule at some point just to make sure it's Peter repeatedly.
Okay.
Slasher month. No.
I was gonna, no, because, like, let me remind you that James has been pushing for Trash Month.
Okay, fuck.
Every week.
That's pretty trashy, though. Ah, we could fit something in Trash Month like that. I feel like the House on Sorority Row actually has a good reputation.
It does. It actually has a pretty good reputation.
Yeah, we gotta go pure trash there.
Like, for Trash Month, we're talking, like, Velocipap faster.
Oh, yeah. No, we gotta go Toxic Avenger shit right there. Yeah, for reals. But principal photography was reported to last only 26 days in Baton Rouge and St. Francisville, Louisiana.
I did not know how much filming actually happens in Louisiana. Apparently, it's quite a bit.
Interesting.
Like TV shows and because it's right next to Georgia. It's not quite Georgia.
You know what, though? I just realized the only state I don't think I've ever seen in our analytics is Louisiana. We never get Louisianan fucking listeners.
We're just not funny enough.
No. We don't know that, and we don't play any jazz in our opening, and
Listen. I'll forgive them for fucking anything. Like, truly, one of my favorite places ever. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to a lot of places.
Yeah.
But, like, I've been to enough. Like, one of my favorite places, New Orleans.
I've never been. I've heard it's awesome. Everybody tells me I'd love it because I love jazz.
I didn't know you like jazz. But
I love jazz.
You love jazz?
I love jazz and whiskey and bourbon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about fried foods?
I love fried foods. I have only had Gator once and I thought it was the shit.
It's fucking delicious. Okay. Yeah. So anyone who's listening, I cannot endorse, recommend, encourage you to go to New Orleans enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, it's so much fun. It's so, like, it just has a vibe,
yeah,
like, about it that is just, like, I think you would really like it. I've been wanting to go back forever, but then COVID happened.
I know. My parents went, and they couldn't stop telling me either. Like, oh, this is your riot.
Ugh. Truly, you'll go, and you'll be like, I don't want to leave.
Wow. Goddamn bourbon and fucking jazz bars, dude. That's my shit.
Also, like, think of, like, Las Vegas, like, the 24-hour open canister, like, but think of it in, like, a chill, deeply haunted location.
Dig it. I'm down, because that's the thing. Vegas, I think...
Vegas is too overwhelming.
I grew out of Vegas for sure.
Yeah, I think most. I think once you get past your late 20s, like you're like okay.
Once you get past your early 20s, you're okay.
I know a lot of people like from 20 to like 25 who are just Vegas.
Yeah, no, I was that person for a long time.
I've never been.
Oh, I went to Vegas again when I was like 28. And I was like,
you're like, I'm fucking over.
Oh my god.
No, it's like it's a hive of scum and villainy, but like
actual scum and villainy, you're just like, wait, this is not good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you're like,
I don't feel good.
No. Anyway, sorry for the aside.
Yeah, no. We're fine. So the screenwriters originally intended to use Madonna's song Like a Prayer instead of Kim Carnes' tune Betty Davis Eyes. So they wrote an impassioned letter to Madonna, who replied that she let them use any song in her catalog except Like a Prayer, which she does not license.
At all.
Oh, wow. Belinda Carlisle?
Carlisle's. You've never seen the word? Anyway.
No, never seen it together.
No.
Belinda Carlisle's 1987 song, Heaven is a Place on Earth, came close to being chosen for the movie. But ultimately, they did go with Betty Davis Eyes. Actually, that would totally fit.
I just imagine the, ooh, yeah. Baby, do you know what that's worth?
They did use that in Harold and Kumar also.
Did they really?
Yeah,
I believe it was the second one. I love Heaven is a Place on Earth. It also has a special place in my heart after that episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah.
That's right! Oh, I haven't thought about that in forever.
Yeah, because Black Mirror jumped really the shark.
Really tanked. No, you know what happened is reality jumped the shark and Black Mirror didn't keep up.
No, they were just like, okay.
They couldn't handle it.
Once they started making predictions that were coming true, they were like, we gotta stop. Yeah, we're too powerful.
Yeah, see the third episode of Black Mirror season one for that one. Holy shit. Wait, it was the second of season two when the cartoon wins the election.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about the pig.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, we do have a pig fucker in office, but he's gone soon, baby!
By the time this episode comes out!
All right, former pig fucker, not in office anymore. Wow.
Can't wait.
So the cast was encouraged to go off script. That's right. And many of Thomas Middleditch and Adam Devine's improvisations were retained in the final cut, to which I will say right now, Adam Devine is much better at improvisation. Anyways.
Jesus. You are salty.
Did not like his character. The revelation
did
that...
Did you not like his character? Or did you not like his dialogue?
I don't like his fucking mannerisms. I don't like his fucking face.
I mean, he wasn't like my favorite character, but I thought it was funny.
I did not... See, I didn't think it was funny.
Okay.
Yeah, so I didn't laugh at any of his shit.
I was just like...
But I thought Adam Devine was kind of gold.
Really? Like, he annoyed the shit out of me.
No, I thought I thought he fucking nailed that.
God, I think
ass
he's
jog
so
piece of shit,
fucking
dude.
Annoying.
He can be, but in this type of role, perfect. Fucking, this is exactly an Adam Devine type of role. Not a good.
Did you watch the bloopers at the end?
Yeah. Pretty good still.
Yeah. No, I thought that was.
Actually, I like when they include bloopers. Actually,
when I was watching that, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I agree. I totally. Totally. But the reveal that Gertie slept with an autistic guy was scripted in a very mean-spirited way, and Alia Shawkat had a real problem with it, so she decided to come up with her own dialogue. The writers and director have all praised her instincts in regards to that scene. Good job, Alia Shawkat.
Woo!
I agree. Way to fucking pull that shit off.
Oh, yeah, it was a great line and she's just like, yeah. And he's really romantic.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, though. That could be very mean-spirited if you do not pull that off.
When Nina Dobrev said the line, isn't he autistic? And I was just like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. I was leaving my mouth. I was just like, no. Mm-hmm. And then she was just like, yeah, and he's very romantic. I was like, ah!
And that was a good save. That was a goddamn good save. Yeah, because then it could have been just shitpiling, and that's never fun.
No.
They already have a couple F slurs in here, so yeah. They'll start cross the line too far. So.
I know. There's a line. Don't cross it too much. Like, you know, you don't punch down.
The car accident at the beginning of the film was entirely computer generated, obviously. But the car crash and explosion at the camp was done practically. Oh, they could only afford one.
Well, also, like $4 million budget, guys.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, it's fine.
Quick aside. That car accident scared the shit out of me the first time I watched it.
The first one?
Because it's so out of nowhere.
I totally saw it coming.
I mean, I saw it coming. Like, I knew it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew, like, I was just like, oh, she's about to get hit. They're about to get hit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're totally
dancing. And it's like I literally yelled at my screen, when's it going to fucking happen?
Like, I knew that they were going to get into a car accident, but then it just happened so fucking quick. I was like, it gave me, like, whiplash. It was very quick.
And I got to say, for the CG, you know what? At least they established them regularly driving in CG.
Yeah.
So that took the burden off of, like, oh, now it looks clearly fake. It's like, no, the whole scene was designed in this way.
Yeah.
And that's a very smart cinematic technique.
And all the driving scenes are done. Like, all the other ones after.
Yeah, yeah. So. They keep the tone pretty consistent. Good job, movie. So the song the camp counselors play after the first murder is Michael, Row Your Boat Ashore. The same song the counselors are playing in the pre-credit sequence in Friday the 13th from 1980. So they also wear very similar yellow shirts.
Oh no, it's almost like it was done on purpose.
My God, homage. Thy name is the Final Girls. In an earlier draft of the script, the kids were self-aware that they were stuck in a montage while it was happening. Would have been fucking cool, but probably done to death by this point.
I know.
Yeah. Both Alia Shawkat and Malin Ackerman had broken their left hands prior to production. That's coincidental. Like, yeah, they're both rowing, you know?
It's weird.
Yeah. Although Ackerman's injury wasn't very apparent, there are numerous scenes where it's clear that Shawkat is having difficulty moving her fingers. Yeah, I didn't notice that. But okay.
I went back and I was like, oh, okay, like she's kind of like.
Kind of makes sense. Yeah, kind of.
She's struggling.
During rehearsal, Thomas Middleditch tripped over the velvet rope in the movie theater. Director Todd Strauss-Schulzen decided to add that as a gag in the film in order to momentarily linger on the cardboard standee for Camp Blood 2, Cruel Summer. That actually was a very smart choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Tripping over the thing, I was just like, oh. Yeah. Like, it just reminded me of, like, every, like, dorky guy in, like, high school who was just like, I'm cool. And, like, I was like, oh my God.
Me my whole life.
Yeah.
I do this often.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're not, like, trying... You understand your limits now as a human, and I don't think you try to do that.
Didn't you... Do you remember me telling you about my knee last week?
No.
No? That I need my corner of my bed?
No, you didn't tell me this.
It's almost, like, 3 times. It was pretty bad.
Really?
You know how my bed has, like... You know, I have to lift up to get in there?
There's, yeah,
like,
you were talking about your upper body strength earlier.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. Yeah, I was bragging to Alex about my upper body strength. I'm like, it's not there.
But, these are noodle arms,
no,
baby.
No, no. These are just enough to get on my bed, really. But as I got up one of the days, there's like a little, I don't know what you call that, like a
I've
pillar?
Been in your, yeah, I've been like in
a,
your room enough.
It's like a pillar, but yeah. Like I did like a falcon knee to the very corner. And I used that momentum and it was like a hard fucking, so it was like a right in the fucking corner. And I literally like,
did you just have to lay there and just like writhe in pain?
I went up and then I literally turned on my back and I did, and I did the Peter Griffin like, while YouTube's playing in the background like, ooh, now defunct, well, this amusement park, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, fucking let me die.
Come get me, you cruel god.
Oh my, it hurt for a week.
Oh.
It hurt for a god. Every time I went up cautiously because I'm not doing it again. Not doing it again.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was so bad.
Oh, yeah. That's bad.
Yeah, yeah. So giving the full force of your knee to the corner of a wall. The very corner
you know,
of a wall.
I keep elbowing, like, the door in my office, like, going, like, to a different room. And I've done it, like, 3 times to the point where they're like, are you? And I'm like, I'm spatially stupid, I guess.
I like that. I am also spatially stupid. It's stupid.
It's very stupid.
I don't like it. Yeah. Like, it happens all the time.
Yeah. Like, I've done that before. Like, I've, yeah. One time. This was, like, embarrassing, like, back in, like, high school where, like, having a big ass was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to go sit down on a curb and I knocked someone's phone out of their hand with my ass.
You're like, ah, crack screen, huh? Too fucking bad.
Baddy, yaddy, yaddy, yaddy.
Oh, boy. Spatially stupid podcast.
Spatially stupid, the podcast.
The podcast right here. Oh, anyways, so many of the scenes were actually shot in order. However, the real world scenes which opened the film were shot at the very end of production, after the cast had ample time to bond to help ensure that the audience would believe the relationships, of course, of their characters, which...
I thought it was smart.
Smart. Very,
I thought
it was smart. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. You don't deny those early on in the film.
Mm-mm.
So the original ending featured Max and Chris waking up in the hospital as the only survivors. It was deemed too much of a downer. So director Todd Strauss-Schulzen scripted and shot a new ending in which their friend survived too. Both endings tested poorly. So the scene utilized in the final cut of the movie is a mashup of moments from both versions. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, the ending I thought was stupid.
I didn't like it either.
I loved this whole fucking movie until the last 15 seconds.
Seriously. I think that's, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
And then I was just like, guys, no.
It almost seems shoehorned. Like, considering the sentimentality that came before, mm-hmm. I was expecting more payoff in that sense.
Oh, you were expecting something like they wake up and like, she's alive or like.
No, just something a little less like. Sequel,
mm-hmm.
like something less like obvious, because that almost seemed a little too obvious, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know.
I did like we'll talk about it.
We'll get there. We're almost there. We're almost there, people. We got it. But production for the film began on April 22nd, 2014. Of course, with an estimated budget of $4.5 million. And on April 23rd, 2014, a photo from the set was revealed by one of the cast. Over 200 extras were sought for large scenes, actually. So.
Which I'm just like, there's like 7 people in this movie.
Yeah.
What large scenes? Maybe the movie theater? Oh, the movie theater!
Yeah, but I mean, like, you can, I don't know, I guess for a movie theater. It's a very small portion of the film.
Fun fact that mm-hmm. did not make it in here. They couldn't actually set a real movie theater on fire.
Clearly.
So they lit another room on fire and superimposed the flames into the movie theater.
Interesting. You know what? With the shoddy CG quality here, that matches.
It tracks.
Yeah, 100%. So principal photography concluded, obviously, after the 26 days on May 25th, 2014. In October 2014, some of the cast and crew returned for pickups and scene reshoots following a test screening earlier that month, as is the Hollywood way.
Woo!
So on December 22nd, 2014, Strauss-Schulzen stated that post-production had been completed for the film. And according to this guy, the film was required to be rated PG-13 at the studio's request. Bad fucking move. The original script was written with an R rating in mind, but it was requested, of course, to be lower down. Todd Strauss-Schulzen fought hard for his take of the film, but of course was pleased with the final result.
I would like to see an R-rated version of this movie.
I think it fits the tone. It needed to be R, to be honest with you.
It almost made it a hair too wholesome.
A hair too wholesome. I like that. That's a good way of putting it. Yes. A hair too wholesome.
So, finally, the time has come.
Yay!
The Final Girls had its world premiere on March 13th, the glorious day of March 13th,
that's right.
In 2015 at South by Southwest. The film was one of the festival's opening night films, screening at the Paramount Theater. It then closed the Stanley Film Festival on May 2nd, 2015, and had a gala premiere at the Los Angeles Film Festival on June 16th. Couple days after another great day in history.
Yay.
2015.
Why didn't it make more money?
I know. The film also screened at the 2015 Toronto International Film Festival on September 19th, 2015, and the Sitges Film Festival on October 12th, 2015. Someone's going to be like,
I should know this, yeah.
You should know this, because mm-hmm. I was expecting you to correct
the
me.
The Sight Geese.
The film received a video on demand and limited release on October 9th, 2015 by Stage 6 Films. This is where its entire revenue comes from.
Oh, wow.
So, on in April of 2016, two special midnight screenings of the film were held at the Sunshine Cinema in New York City, following a Q&A with a co-star. I always fuck up her first name.
Alia,
right?
Okay. I think so.
Alia Shawkat and director Todd Strauss Schulson.
They only got two of them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A panel for the film was also held at San Diego Comic-Con, woo, on July 23rd, 2016, with Strauss-Olson, Fortin, Miller, Middleditch, and Trimber appearing. Mm. The Final Girls received positive reviews from film critics, and it holds a 73% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes based off of 70 reviews.
Which is more than most slashers fucking get, to
absolutely,
be honest with you.
With a weighted average of 6.29 out of 10, the site's critical consensus reads, "The Final Girls offers an affectionate nod to slasher tropes while adding a surprising layer of genuine emotion to go with the meta amusement," unquote.
Yay.
Jeez. Dennis Harvey of Variety gave the film a positive review, writing, quote, "Though not quite as inspired or consistent as the similarly self-mocking likes of The Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, or even the first two Scream picks, this is good fun that should delight genre fans," unquote.
Okay, I think that's my take. Me and Dennis Harvey of Variety are on the same front on this one. I totally agree with that.
All right,
that's
fair
100%.
Enough. Justin Lowe of The Hollywood Reporter wrote, quote, "Genre enthusiasts will get a kick out of Todd Strauss-Schulson's creative homage to classic slasher movies, which respects familiar horror conventions while introducing a sly contemporary perspective," unquote.
Hmm.
Laura Kern of Film Comment called the film, quote, "a sharp, wickedly funny, and unexpectedly heartfelt homage," adding, quote, "it's a gimmicky premise, perhaps, but a highly effective one. No mere meta exercise. The film innovatively blends in the worlds of the 1986 teens of Camp Bloodbath with the modern day ones," unquote.
You got through it. You're good.
I made it. I was just like, oh. And Sebastian Zavala, writing for Screen Anarchy, declared, quote, "part deconstruction of 80s slasher movies and part emotional mother-daughter bonding drama, the film works surprisingly well, considering it lacks many of the staples horror flicks such as Friday the 13th were famous for, namely the blood and nudity," unquote.
Yay for blood and nudity. It's okay, guys. You don't have to have it in every movie, but there's plenty of it.
But if it's a slasher film, it should. Show me the titties. Anyway.
Your cat runs. Where are the titties? Where are the titties at?
We all have we share a consciousness.
Right.
All right, but enough of those guys. On to what you guys are really here for. Letterboxd.
Yay!
So, this film has a 3.3 average rating out of 22,000 reviews.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. So, Indy, with 4.5 stars, says, quote, "when I said, hey, I wish there was a movie with neon and synths and emotionally resonant story between multiple female characters and an all-around jaw-dropping cinematography and cool meta references and a Farmiga's sister kicking ass, I didn't think someone would actually listen," unquote.
Oh, that's your review one right there, huh?
Suzanne by Leonard Cohen with 4.5 stars. That's their actual
username.
That's
a good fucking username right there.
With 4.5 stars says, quote, "through my tears, she got Betty Davis eyes," unquote. Laurie Strode with 4 stars.
Oh, wow.
Says, quote, "this ranks with some of the decade's best horror comedies, an affectionate nod to 80s slashers with a hefty amount of genuine emotion to go with meta amusement," unquote.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. All right.
And only because I have to include alternate opinions, even if they're wrong, Lucy with 2.5 stars says, "a little not good." Also, "where's my hilarious comedy starring Alia Shawkat as the leading lady and not the best friend for once, world?" Unquote.
Are you seriously, dude? What the? She's not starring fucking anything. She's always like, hey, side character. Hey. Yeah. I'm a little, ugh.
Anyway, that's the movie.
Yay, we did it.
We made it.
Very well praised, not very well promoted.
Truly, like a lot of the marketing was like, they released a still, or like they had like trailers released on blah, blah, blah.
Couldn't even been like, hey, you guys like Cabin in the Woods, right? You like
For
crying?
For fans of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Dude. I mean, to be fair, Tucker and Dale didn't make a lot of money either.
It was a sleeper, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
But even then, like, at that point, like, people had kind of, like, known what it was about, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It feels kind of shitty to have these underrepresented when they're this unique.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, we'll get into the thoughts right now.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the film. I did. I agree with the reviewer, though. It seemed just short of the bigger meta movies. I think it just lacked the, I would say, consistency of them.
Because
it was a little more, again, some of the characters I kind of grated me a little bit.
Interesting.
Like, I liked Aaliyah Shawkat a lot. Mm-hmm. I liked the Farmiga sister a lot. Adam Devine was great. Most of the other ones I can give or take, though. Especially fucking, what is his name? Middle fucking whatever?
Middle Ditch.
I was like, say Middle Dick.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why I immediately said something. I was like, no.
Yeah,
it's low-hanging fruit, Fuentes.
I don't know. See, but it was stuff like that I was kind of like, it was a little too, like, he was back, his turn against the killer, he's going to get stabbed, blah, blah, blah. Like, they could have been a little more clever about certain things, and it was kind of syrupy. Sweet to the point of syrupy.
Syrupy, at times. Okay.
Like, it was a little too hard. But, I gotta say, other than those, like, nitpicks, which they are nitpicks, they are not the whole movie, but they're heights the movie reaches at some point where you're like, ah, okay, you went that far.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, entirely unique. Actually has a very resonant kind of story. Gets very sad. I do feel like they could... I don't know. It's so slick in parts. Like, this is not a cheap-looking film aside from the CG. Like, it is... this review from Letterboxd says it very well. This is well shot. This is like a cinematographer. They got some talent.
Yeah.
And used that $4 million right there. And good characters other than... Like, the characters that were good, I mm-hmm. thought were great. I actually thought were kind of fantastic. And even the characters didn't like her best friend that was like, me, you know, like, when your mom died, like... When she when she got a chance to, like, play a different...
Be a character?
To be a character.
Yeah.
I was like, where was that fucker the whole time? I wanted that more.
Like, you needed the depth.
I needed... Exactly. It actually... I feel like if this director or the writer wanted to push this a little more, they could have done it. Mm-hmm. Like with the talent they had on hand ready, they could have pushed this into a much deeper, more profound film. As it is... Still a very good film.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it could have been more one way. Because I don't think if they would have leaned more into the slasher, like, if they would have went the other way, like the Cabin in the Woods way.
Mm-hmm.
No. This needed to actually be a deeper film.
No, because, like, the level of, like, meta-ness that mm-hmm. they get to in this movie, you can't really compare it to, like, a Cabin in the Woods, mm-hmm. just because, like, that is, like... Holy meta. Like, that is, like, all, like, that's, like, if you're, like, if we're looking at, like... Tucker and Dale versus Evil, Scream, Cabin mm-hmm. in the Woods, and this, like, this is, like I said, a hair too wholesome.
Yes.
Like, this, like, yeah. Because it has, but also, that's something, like, going on to my thoughts, I love this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
It's a very good movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And my own, like, my only real criticisms, which there aren't many, mm-hmm. Is the CGI. Which I was just like,
Yeah, yeah. It's not great, but it kind of fits to me.
It does.
Yeah.
It fits the tone, for mm-hmm. sure. But I just wanted a rated R version. I needed more blood. I needed like, more violence for it to really have the horror vibe. Because this feels mm-hmm. more like a comedy.
It does.
Than anything.
Does.
Like, if we're going back to... The horror comedy scale that we posted forever ago. Like, this is just a touch over more on the comedy side because it has those added wholesome elements.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, I do like that they decided to use a mother-daughter relationship as, like, the vehicle for this story.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Yeah. clearly. I got you.
But, yeah. And I did really like that. I thought it was very unique and very different. Mm-hmm. And you don't see that a whole lot, like, explored in horror films. Like, it's usually, like, it's or slashers specifically, where you see, you know, it's mostly just, like, a group of teenagers. And, like, yeah, it is a group of teenagers in this also, but it also manages to combine it. So it has this really sweet mother-daughter story.
That, and I think you make a good point with that, because the thing that really makes this movie stand apart, which is why I give it more credit than, which is why I want to lean to this, the more sentimental stuff,
mm-hmm.
without being too syrupy, pull it off well. But a lot of the relationships in this film mean something.
Yeah.
Which is not common in slasher movies at all. Even in the meta slasher movies, like the relationships in Cabin in the Woods don't really mean shit. They
no,
just
they're
don't.
Very. I mean, they're like super, super, superficial.
Yeah, But whereas Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, like
super, like
that means something. Like lean into that. I think having the it does not have the balance that a Tucker and Dale has, unfortunately.
Okay.
Which it, I would say, like, if it had that level of balance behind it, this thing would be like up there. Like I would love it. But as it stands, I think it's like Tucker and Dale versus Evil, but they stick too close to the tone of the asshole teenager sometimes. Like they stick in that in that realm. And I need more of the one-on-one. I actually need this to be like maybe 15 minutes longer and give me some scenes that like really flesh out like the characters.
Also,
I would have loved that.
This is an hour and 20 minutes.
Dude, it's like fast.
It is.
It's a
fast
movie. Yeah, but that's kind of why also like for what this movie's aiming for, it needs to be a little longer. I need to really actually spend some time with these characters because they're not bad characters.
No.
Overall, they're really not that bad. And the good ones are great. So if I can get more time with that and make the stakes feel like they mean something instead of like kind of goofy kind of stakes.
You need like the fishing scene from Tucker and Dale.
I need something like that.
You realize like, oh, these are just goofballs. Or like, because like truly, I'm emotionally attached to Tucker and Dale. Like, love those guys.
But I mean like that's the thing with only having to balance two characters, maybe three that mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it wants a lot more out of all of its cast besides the doofuses.
Yes.
But they don't give him enough time to breathe. Like the girl that is kind of like, I'm the dumb girl kind of trope. But she's like, seriously, just like, no, let's get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if they would have given her more, again, like I said up top, more scenes where you kind of see the other side of the character you see later on. Dude, that death would have been meaningful as fuck.
Oh, when the PJ Souls replacement?
Yeah.
When she falls face first into a bear trap?
No, not her. The one that when they both burn. Doing the lighter thing.
Oh, Nina Dobrev's character.
Yes, her. Give her less times to be like, like they play that up too much.
Like they give her too much like of a mean girl vibe?
They give her too much of like a, you're not really like a depth-driven character vibe until we need you to be.
Oh, because like, you have that where it's just like she apologizes and they all hug and like, I think it's a little too late.
Too little, too late, 100%.
They had kind of, like, gone into it earlier, because, like, she's, like, incredibly, like, snippy, and, like, I don't want to say shallow, but, like, she's kind of a bitch up until that,
exactly,
that moment, where
exactly.
She's just like, oh, and she, you know, and she realizes she's probably going
to
die.
But to the credit to the movie, even when that reveal came, I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
It was very emotionally, like, oh,
yes.
You know?
Now it could, I just feel like it could have had more weight. There's a lot of things in this movie that could have had more weight.
Interesting.
Which I think would have brought it up way higher.
Okay.
But as it is, again, not a bad film at all. Like,
you're just like, here's all the things I didn't like, but overall, good movie.
But they're like, not like flaws that completely derail the movie, because you can still get...
They
like,
don't destroy the film.
No, they absolutely do not. They don't. And it's just frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of those things that I feel like, shit, you were this close.
I'm not
you were
mad.
This fucking
I'm
close.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I'm just a little bit like, hold on a second. You almost had it. It was in your fucking grasp, dude. You gotta commit. You gotta commit that hard.
God, you're a disappointed parent.
But, I mean, otherwise, like, again, aside again from Middle Ditch's character, who I did not like. I just didn't like him. He was... You know what? Less time for him, more time for the other characters. Switch the amount
emphasis.
Of focus. Switch it. 100% right. Could have had a better movie. Honestly. Yeah.
You were really anti-Middle Ditch.
Oh, very anti-Middle Ditch in this one. Adam Devine, though? Great. I loved it.
God, he's annoying.
He was
punch
so
him in the
He was so funny. I thought he was supposed to be punchable. He was supposed to be punchable as fuck. And you wanted to punch him every fucking time. And I'm just like, God. That goddamn smirk.
I know. Like, oh, I just want to fucking break his neck.
Ugh.
Anyway, let's talk about the ending before we move on. Because we talked about it earlier, and I definitely want to make sure we circle back to it. But, like, the ending of the movie, like, we both are kind of in agreement. The last 15 seconds, like, kind of fuck up this movie for me.
Yeah. I mean, what is there to say? I don't know what approach would have worked, but I can tell you that whatever they picked, it did feel a little haphazard.
I wanted them to wake up in their own time.
You know what? This is one of those instances
like,
where I agree.
Like, when they wake up in, like, the hospital, like, I wanted it to be, like, post-fire, where it's just, like, no, like, now they have this, like, shared experience. Like, no, we mm-hmm. all remember this is what happened. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, like, everyone's kind of, like, learned something, and they can, like, move on. And you know what I mean? Like, then, because, like, that would have stayed in the tone of, like, the cheesiness of the movie, I think. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the end where it's just like, oh, fucking gotcha, you're in the sequel now, you know?
Yeah, too hard in that direction. Too hard in that direction.
Which sucks because, like, it also sets it up for sequel bait, and then, like, we're never getting a sequel to this.
No, hell no. There's no way. There's no fucking way.
Which sucks, but also, like, this is fine as a one-off. It's totally, totally enjoyable as a one-off.
Dude, I know, but it doesn't feel as... There's no, it doesn't feel as conclusive because of the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the problem. Like,
because, like, now my whole thing, I'm like, are they going to have to, like, fucking fight their way through, like, the whole series? Like, if this is Friday the 13th, they got a long fucking way to go.
But, I mean,
which is so clearly modeled after.
But I also think, too, like I do feel like the grounded type of ending would have been deserved in this. They really could have gone...
Mm-hmm.
With, say, you know what? Like, when they're all finished with this thing, how about just we have a screening at my house? And right. She gets to enjoy the movie her mom starred in. Or, my mom was also good in this movie, and they all watched this other mm-hmm. thing that she did. And give us a nice, actual, sentimental, grounded, deep kind of ending where she's over something.
Yeah.
And she's ready to really take it on. Like, what we got instead was... It felt like studio bullshit.
Okay, well, let's go, because this kind of ties into one of the questions I have. So as mm-hmm. subversive as this movie is, it ultimately is about mourning and grief, I think.
100%.
Do you think it tells both of these stories well? Like, the horror side as well as kind of, like, the mourning side of it?
I think it tells them well, but it doesn't give it the explanation point at the end for each. It's just short of either.
Okay.
Like, but not like...
So you think they just bit off a little more than they could chew, and then it fell a little short on both ends?
It was not evenly distributed, I think, between...
Okay.
I think they lean a little too hard into the trope thingy, when realistically the most interesting part of the film... People done tropes to death.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between her and her mom, and the story underneath that, her getting over and, like, getting a second chance.
Right.
That's great stuff. That's really good stuff. And with the framework of a slasher... Again, if they just gave that more credence and gave it an R rating so that when you do get the slasher shit, it feels fucking just guts
real.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been perfect.
As opposed to the silhouetted single stab falls mm-hmm, to the ground mm-hmm. dead, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, it just, to me, it was just a balancing issue. That wasn't quite, they didn't quite get it all together. That could be a budget thing. That could be like pretty fast turnaround from what we're looking at right here. It's just short of a classic to me,
mm-hmm.
like overall, realistically, and that touches on. But the way it deals with grief is legitimately good.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I agree.
It's legitimately good.
It does it well. This did not make it into the production because I thought it was really sad. But in one of the initial versions of the script, Max is mm-hmm. like suicidal after her mom dies.
I wouldn't say I would love that, but I think it would have added a lot to the movie.
Like the one, there's like a scene where like she's like about to hang herself, and like Gertie calls, and like
maybe too dark if you actually do that part.
Like it like it's very obvious. Like it's like it's like literally like she attempts to kill herself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm really glad that it didn't make it in the movie.
Yeah. Okay. That little far, but
like that's really sad.
Yeah, I would think her like writing a note and then like looking at pills or something and just tearing the note. Like, something like that would be
yeah,
like,
but then
okay.
Gertie calls and, like, it, like, kind of, like, knocks her out of it, so.
Yeah, and then just her burning the... Okay, I can see the intent of the scene, but, again, I feel like that's... With the creative team, they're like, let's go hard. It's like, hold on, there are other ways around getting to the theme that you need to get to, but they obviously had to get this out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's so close to a classic for me. It's, like, right there.
You're like...
It's, like, on a like, hair. Wow. There's just a couple... Lego pieces
they
could have moved around.
Wholesome.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've kind of already talked about this, but I do want to bring it up again. It's been a really long time since we've covered a comedy horror film.
That's true.
It's been a very long time. We don't have a lot. We don't have a lot. As far as horror comedies go, how does this hold up for you? And I kind of know your answer in comparison to the other ones. Like, you know, your Scream, your Cabin in the Woods, you know.
I mean, it's not as good as them, I don't think, mm-hmm. but like it's still It's still not bad.
See,
like, that's the, like, but it's like so not bad. Like, see, it's actually still good.
I wish this was more popular. Like, I feel like it should be, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I think that, like, I would put this in a similar arena as Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale versus Evil, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think that, yeah, I really like this movie. So I think it kind of, like, definitely same ballpark.
Yeah, I can see it. I can understand it being in that realm for anyone, honestly. Mm-hmm. If anybody finds this movie in the same vein, you know what? I totally get where you're coming from. I think, to me, just in the way that, I don't know, that what I was looking for out of the story by the end of it, I'm just like, ah.
So you just couldn't...
I needed more of these and less of that.
You needed more than what
mm-hmm,
you got.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like the other movies, they gave you exactly what they sought out to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess bit off more than you could chew, like you were saying. They sought out to do more in many different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't 100% nail each of them. But again, that doesn't mean it's bad. That just means it's not Cabin in the Woods.
Just means it fell. Yeah. So short.
Yeah, that
There's
just means
so much potential in this movie.
That just means Joss Whedon didn't fucking write it, and then it didn't have Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah,
bam.
Right.
Bam. And now, ugh. What a burden.
What are you
going
to do?
What are you going to do? No, no. I see where it was going for, though. That's the thing. I think that's what frustrates me.
See the vision. But I think that's kind of like, I mean, yes, it did fall short in some aspects. But I think that's kind of a good indicator of like the world building, where you can mm-hmm. see so clearly where this movie was meant to go.
Yes. And you know what, though? Another big detractor. Bullshit ending. That 15 seconds, dude.
Fucked up the movie.
If they would have gave us a more sentimental ground ending, as we talked before, could have been up there. It could have been even more debatable. Like, it could have been like, I'm really seeing your case right now. Because, goddamn, did I get those feels at the end. Instead, the feels were stripped from me for a gag.
Ugh.
Not great. Not great.
Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, when you top your movie off that way.
And the third act is so emotional.
It is.
Just to end it with like you said, a cheap gag, basically. Mm-hmm. It's just like, aww. Like, it doesn't give you that fucking payoff. And that's the only, like, truly for me, that is my only real genuine criticism. Yeah. Everything else is just me being, like, nitpicky.
I'm being very nitpicky today.
You are being.
I'm so nitpicky right
Anthony
now.
Anthony was in a fucking mood when he got to my apartment.
I did. But you know what? Again, there's a lot of joy to come from this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it really brought me, it helped me talking about it, obviously. But again, when you give me such character growth mm-hmm. and such revelations, end with that growth. With that growth, that is your landing. You stuck the fucking landing. Don't give me the little like, ah, ha, ha. You know how we were talking last week about Wes Craven and Red Eye and all that mm-hmm. shit? Same shit. Scares mm-hmm. the fuck out of me to the last 15 seconds.
You're
are you shitting me? You're really going to give me the little wink to the fucking camera right now?
Your little...
When you earned my terror up to this point?
You earned my terror. I love that.
Ugh. Ugh. Same thing, dude. Learn horror directors, learn how to end your fucking movies. Please.
Yeah.
Please.
Please.
Ugh.
Okay, now for the fun segment of part Yay. Of the podcast. So you have to replace the entire cast with Muppets except for one character who remains human. Who is it? And bonus points, which Muppets replace which characters?
Ooh, okay. Okay, we're going to replace all the characters with Muppets. So Middle Ditch is clearly Gonzo.
Okay.
Middle Ditch is clearly Gonzo. What's her name? Nina?
Mm-hmm.
Nina is Miss Piggy for sure.
Really? I was going to do the PJ Souls lookalike.
Which one was she?
The one who like literally couldn't like stop herself from taking off her
oh
clothes.
Oh my god. Okay, you're right.
She's Miss Piggy.
You're right. 100%. So if I'm looking at the only one that honestly I keep for the sake of comedy is Adam Devine as a normal person.
Really?
Everyone. He's a Muppet on his own. You can't capture that fucking Muppet. No, that's pure comedy though. Give me a... Yeah, no, Middle Ditch is Gonzo, though, for sure.
For sure, that's your...
Yeah. Kermit is the other fucking regular straight dude, like...
Oh, fucking Alexander Ludwig?
Yeah, he's that.
Okay.
I don't even know. That's a tough one. Okay, that's actually a really tough question. Entire cast of Muppets, but who would remain the same? But you know what? I'd like Farmiga to actually be the same also. But then that would mean her mom has to be a Muppet, and you need two Muppets.
Okay, Max I want to keep human... I agree with your Gonzo assessment. Mm-hmm. I would make Adam Devine's character Fozzie.
Okay, yeah, he's Fozzie. Fozzie Bear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fozzie is the jock Jesus. I'm just trying to fuck.
I mean, yeah, and then I would make Alia Shawkat.
Not a lot of Lady Muppets.
No, but still, it's just going to be replaced with Sam Eagle.
Oh, wow. Oh, dude, that's Beaker. Giving. Oh. Just Capri and the very emotionally resident fucking. Mm-hmm.
And, that'd be good. And then I want the villain to be played by Animal.
Oh, of course. Of course. Can't get around that, dude. Yeah. No mask.
No mm-hmm. mask. It's just imagine, like, Animal, like, coming out of the forest, just like, mm-hmm.
I dig it. Okay, I dig it. Okay, bonus points for Mrs. Webster. I got you.
Yay, bonus points. Wait, yeah.
Do we get a kill of the film?
We can do a kill of the film. What's your kill of the film?
I don't even remember. I was just saying that. Honestly.
Okay, we have the explosion, we have the car accident, we have bear trap to the face.
Oh, bear trap to the face. But then, you know,
it's so quick. See, this is why this movie needed an R rating. We can't really do kill of the film because most of them are off screen.
Okay, Middle Ditch getting fucking taken out then. You know what? Happy about that. Yeah, kill the film just so they have to see
him getting
like
hit by
the
car.
Fucking movie.
Him getting hit by the car was really funny. Yeah. Okay, I know. Adam Devine's character when he like gets launched through the windshield and it's just like bent.
That's right. They could have done R so good. Son of a bitch.
All but right. It was PG-13.
PG-13, whatever. Whatever.
Okay. Rate this movie, Anthony Fuentes.
3.5.
You didn't let me say the thing.
Out of what?
Out of 5 overprescribed bottles of Adderall.
Do it again.
Okay, rate this movie, Anthony Fuentes, out of 5 overprescribed bottles of Adderall.
I am going to immediately say 3.5 overprescribed bottles of Adderall, for sure.
I'm going to say 4, just because I liked it more than you.
Yeah. I can see how it would be a 4, though, if they just took my notes, you know? But, you know, 2015 Anthony, or 14 Anthony, he was in a bad place. He couldn't provide notes.
He was too busy.
Heartbroken or unemployed, bam.
Being heartbroken and unemployed.
Yep.
Such is life.
Not right now, baby.
I mean, now you're like, woo. But, all right, I think that concludes. We actually got pretty deep into the discussion about this. But I think that's it. Is there anything else you would like to add about The Final Girls from 2015, directed by Todd Strauss Schulson?
As much as I am very nitpicky about this movie, it's only because I really strongly could have seen the potential there. Like, honestly, like
you truly sound like a disappointed parent. Like, it's just like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Fuck.
At all the elements. This is like it's tweaks. It's honestly tweaks where I'm like, fuck,
truly,
you were right there.
Like, all you needed to do was just be in that writer's room.
Maybe not me, but somebody had to be like, hold on a second.
Just take a pause.
Just, you got gold here. Just pick the gold. Do the gold thing.
Just sift the gold out like you're a miner during the gold rush.
Mm-hmm. Get that. What was the food that they would eat when they struck gold? Hangman something.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Anyways, I'm going. My historical brain's coming up right now. I'm not even getting it. But yeah.
What? Anyway, if you know what Anthony's talking about,
Hangman something. It's like an omelet. Yeah. Anyways, my analogy was get that prize. For getting the gold. You're right there.
So close. Yet so far.
Yeah. Guys. I couldn't even get the analogy there. But either way, watch the film. Watch the movie. It's on Hulu. Watch it. It's fine.
Yeah.
You'll like it.
I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
Guys, next week. Oh, also, when this movie comes out, it is Inauguration Day. We mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
But fuck yeah.
Yes. And if there's any violence that we're not talking about.
It's because we recorded this only a couple days prior, but things move so fast, we just need to stop talking about current events on the show.
I know, we really do.
But guys, next week.
Oh boy. We're gonna... So, I write pretty large-scale episodes here and there, you know?
Yeah.
Talked about historical significance in cinema and horror, blah, blah, blah. It's very interesting because this particular film, even though it has a lot of links to shit we've been dealing with lately. Not dealing with, but has been a part of our entertainment phenomenon. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a pretty broadly reaching big episode. And be pretty bloody. Very bloody, very arm. We got a guest, one of my film boys.
So, yeah, here's the thing, guys. So, we have a guest next week. We have a guest the week after.
Uh-huh.
We have no guest the week after that.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no. But then the week after that, we have another guest. So, we have a bunch of guests coming up.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be crazy. Also, February is coming up. As you guys know, we have yet to do a February without a theme, and I'm not one to fucking break tradition. Are you?
Me neither. No, I'm not. I am not, Alex.
So, we have the coolest February picked out.
I really enjoy the theme this month, or this year, this season.
This season. Yeah. It's going to be quite fun. We're very excited about it. Just a little teaser. But it's going to be fun. I'm very excited for next week. I think next week's movie is a great catalyst into what we're going into in February.
It is something else. I'll tell you what.
But no, it's going to be a great time. Yeah. So that was, again, Final Girls from 2015. Not to be confused with Final Girls from 2015. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening.
Quite a sentence there, yeah.
This was a clusterfuck, but when isn't it? Especially when we record during the work week. But thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Please join us next week. It's going to be a great time. And if you like what you heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on iTunes, even if it's just like, cool, exclamation point. You know, like, it helps.
I like the cool. I'll look at it like the dozens of times I've looked at the other reviews.
It's true. We just look at it at night, scroll through it. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. But please consider writing us a review and leaving a 5-star rating. It does mean the absolute fucking world to us. I cannot emphasize that enough. I know I say it every episode, but truly, it's just the fucking coolest. You guys are the coolest.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And then if you would like to find Anthony, you may find him on Twitter and Instagram at Herulian Hustler.
That's me.
And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
That's right.
So until next week, don't run through any movie screens.
Yeah. And also, ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth?
Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. Bye, guys.